He always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
And we're live. Welcome, everybody, here to the Lakers Lounge post-draft edition. I'm here with Aaron Larsoul, who was in the Lakers war room as it all went down.
I was at the facility.
You were right next to Rob Pelinka as he made the call to both of the guys that the Lakers drafted.
Well, I mean, somebody has to get the coffee, right?
Exactly. There's a lot to go over here. A lot. I think there's a lot of Lakers specific stuff. Obviously, they have two new guys, that feel at least that are going to be parts of next year. We still are waiting on some undrafted free agent stuff. Interesting. One thing that really caught my attention late in the draft was Chris Livingston. Rich Paul apparently telling teams not to draft him. That is...
I don't think that's what he said. I think it was he was telling certain teams not to because he had a promise somewhere in the second round. I think that's what the tweet said.
I think it's somewhere in between there.
I'll look at it right now.
He tweeted a lot. So yeah, if you find it, cool.
Yeah. I took it
to mean that, like, hey, like kind of a Reeves situation. Let's just back off here. Let us pick our spot. We have a promise for whatever next year. And because of the relationship that Clutch has with the Lakers, that caught my attention. And that is something that I am going to be looking for as well.
We're both right and we're both wrong.
Yeah,
I just it was read kind it quickly like I said. At the facility. Update here, Clutch Sports CEO Rich Paul began calling teams in the second round and requested them not to take client Chris Livingston. So you have that part right. And then I read this quickly at the facility. Yeah. It's believed Livingston has a set draft spot in the second round.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that's kind of, yeah. Maybe
those are two different things.
He was calling was the team that had the second round promise and told him not to. I don't know. That is weird.
Yeah.
Contradictory. In Cham's defense, though, he sent out and Woj also. There was all kind of there's all kind of typos and mistweets and all that. These dudes are sending out like 300 tweets in the last few hours or so. So
you know what they didn't send? You know what tweets they didn't send?
Uh oh, I'm nervous.
Player trade tweets. We didn't get it. Like, it was contract dumps. That was it. As far as like rotation players who are going to make differences next year, didn't happen. Well, here you go. So the Warriors are trading Patrick Baldwin Jr. to the Wizards as part of the Chris Paul Jordan Poole trade.
That makes it even worse.
What?
For the Warriors.
Does it?
Yeah.
Is Patrick Baldwin like any good? I watched him and
he can really shoot it, and he is currently the tallest guy on the Warriors roster. He's kind of think of Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah. The Warriors are acquiring the number 57 pick from Washington and taking your guy, Trayce Jackson Davis. Somebody you were hoping you texted me that you liked.
He really
slipped.
I liked him. Yes.
Yeah. I was also hoping he would fall out of the draft, but kudos.
Oh, by the way, to the people that are not live, if you guys are listening to this tomorrow, the Lakers launch tomorrow, we're almost through the second round, but we're recording this with just a little bit, a few handful of picks left.
Three. So I want to start macro, because I think there's going to be plenty of time in the next days and weeks to discuss. There's Chris Livingston to the Milwaukee Bucks at 58. But it is interesting to me that we did not get any impact players moved on draft night. That is a new one. And especially given, everything I had heard heading into tonight was – look out for all kinds of movement, get ready mm-hmm. for this, get ready for that. You know, you have movement for a variety of reasons, right? You're going to have movement from, you know, from teams that are trying to get money on their books to hit the salary floor. You're going to have teams trying to shed money if at all possible. You're going to have teams trying to add to their rotation because of how wide open the field was this year. And lo and behold, nothing. It was a very quiet draft night.
I mean, not nothing.
Rashawn Holmes, Davis Bertans, those guys move the needle for you?
Well, let's also, I mean, we brought it up already. Like, it was, it technically, you know, Chris Paul, I would say, moves the needle, right? Especially with some interest from the two Los Angeles teams. It wasn't like during the draft, but it was today. And then obviously, well, Chris Paul twice getting traded and Beal. So there have been some names that have moved the needle. But as it relates to, yes, I think Dallas, the Dallas and then Dallas and OKC and then Dallas and Sacramento. Rashawn Holmes is not a huge name. Davis Bertans, not a huge name. But their contracts are a big deal, right? And two of, I mean, they're not huge money contracts. Bertans was 18 and Rashawn Holmes 12 and then 13. Mm-hmm. So I was interested in the cap space positioning, right? Because Dallas, with the first deal, trading out Bertans and taking nothing back and you know, being willing to move down two spots for the, you know, for the cost of getting off of Bertans, and that opened them up. Got. Say that again?
Well, they got the guy and that
Lively,
they wanted.
They wanted Lively anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So who the Lakers also had a lot of interest in. So I was interested in that because that gave them an opportunity. They don't have any cap space now because of Kyrie's cap hold. But that gave them a path to open up not max level cap space, but in the 30 million range, which, mm-hmm. you know, opens up some interesting names for them. Jaylen. Sure. Or, you know, like Kuz maybe, or even an offer sheet to Austin. Like, having 30 million in space really opens you up to some possibilities. But then it was kind of a strange move. I know they liked the French guy that they drafted at 24. But they also, with Sacramento, they gave Sacramento now the opportunity to have 30, 35 million in cap space by them getting off of Rashawn Holmes, which was strange to me from Dallas's perspective because it cuts into that space. Mm-hmm. And he didn't play in Sacramento's rotation. They were playing Alex Len ahead of him. And they didn't have any big guys.
He being Rashawn Holmes.
Yes. They didn't have any big guys other than Domantas Sabonis. So that was strange to me because all that good work that Dallas did to open up that cap space and getting off of the bad money or the terrible money, they just took back some bad money. So I know they really like, I can't pronounce his name, but I know they really like who they Olivier, got at 24. Yes.
Something. Yeah.
So, I mean, that was interesting to me. So now, like, what does Sacramento do with that cap space? That, you know, they were the three seed last year. They're probably going to lose Harrison Barnes, but that makes them possibly a destination for, you know, maybe Kuz or maybe Draymond, or I mean, look, they don't really have a need for guards, but you know, that could be an offer sheet to some restricted free agent. So that was interesting to me, even though the names at this time are not particularly jaw dropping. It gives some suitors and some teams that, you know, because we've thought of the teams with cap space as, you know, San Antonio and Detroit, Indiana has Houston. Houston, exactly. But Dallas and theoretically Sacramento, or Sacramento and theoretically Dallas, are probably places that could be more appealing for a basketball fit for potential unrestricted free agents and restricted free agents. So I thought that was interesting.
Agree with all of that. The part of it that I continue to find interesting, because we are really in uncharted territory here, uncharted waters when it comes to this new CBA, and it literally legislating that it is more difficult for teams above that second apron to add talent to their rosters.
The two ways are starting to pop in, but continue.
Yeah.
If you're watching live and you see me continuously looking at my phone, it's because.
Same. I have mine right here. I
responding
probably
to text,
so it doesn't look so obvious. But
responding to texts and yeah, all that still
but
working.
So I really think you know, after the league lost its GD mind with the Rudy Gobert trade, and then even Donovan Mitchell going for the number of picks that he went for,
yeah,
and
DeJounte, I mean, Donovan was really good though.
He was, but
DeJounte, like, and now Atlanta is drafting more guards, which would indicate to me that they are not all that excited about paying DeJounte's next contract.
Yeah. But the reason, right from underneath the Lakers. What's that?
Drafting a guard from right under,
yeah,
underneath
right.
the Lakers.
Yeah, the Lakers liked Kobe. But I do think though that I think the market has corrected. It is no longer in the act of correcting. It is no longer like figuring it out right now. I think it is figured out with this new CBA coming. You want as much cost controlled talent as you can possibly get. And if you're going to move a first rounder, it's going to be for a stud, flat out. Or you're getting some draft compensation with that player coming back. And I think tonight really reflected that the market has fully corrected. Do you agree? You know, with the premise.
I mean, basically. Yeah, I think teams
like
are
I think
starting,
pick swaps are going to be more popular. I think you know, two-way draft compensation and second rounders. And stuff.
I think that first rounders, teams are holding on to first rounders more tightly. I think that's partially due to the upcoming CBA and. You know, teams like Denver, for example, just won the title. You're going to have to, you know, they have three max guys and they have Aaron Gordon makes 20 something. And they were able to get contributions from Christian Brown and Bruce Brown, who were on a rookie deal and an exception. So I think you're going to have to continue to do, I think it's even more so. So, but I do still think that when, you know, let's say a player of that level, you know, like KD last year, if that guy becomes available, or that, I mean, KD's a top 12 or 15 guy all time. So like, let's say Dame, for example, right? If Dame becomes available, it's still going to take a whole bunch of first round picks to get Dame. I think that though, what you're seeing is for the guys a notch or two beneath that, they're still stars, but you know, like for example, you know, take the Bradley Beal thing. It's a little different because he had the no trade clause, so that restricted his market some. But for the top 10 guys in the league, I still think it's going to take tons of first round picks. But teams are less willing to do that for the DeJounte Murrays of the world, for the Bradley Beals of the world. You know, those like 20 to 40, top 20 to 40 guys, you're just not going to get that kind of haul anymore.
Yeah, I think that's also kind of reflective of what the pay scale is going to look like too, where the middle earner is not going to, it's going to continue to disappear, I think, in the NBA. And we'll see what that continues to look like and what the players union does to combat it. But as it stands right now, I do really think that in this new CBA, just about every resource is going to be devoted to putting together, you know, your two stars. And then from there, if you can get a third, maybe try to make it work. But for the most part, that's where you start to see all of the cost controlled asset management there. And I think this was the kind of first step towards that. And by the way, we still don't know the full extent of the CBA. Like
no,
I was talking with Raj that like, yeah, we've heard. And I think this is on purpose, but we have heard about all of the machinations that are limited when it comes to roster building that have been limited. But on top of that, like we haven't heard what the actual tax, financial taxes are going to be.
You want to know why? It's not done yet.
There's that.
And it's agreed to. The teams don't have it yet.
Yeah. Well, I think also, like, I think that is, like, you know, this is one of the places where I think the players' union kind of dropped the ball. They're looking at it from a perspective of, like, well, it isn't actually a hard cap. But 8 out of 10 people that I've spoken to in terms of ratio are all saying this is a hard cap. Like, no matter what background I'm talking to, and I've spoken to people from big markets, from small markets, mid markets, whatever. They're, you know, the people who know these kinds of things are all saying, yeah, this is basically a hard cap. And
I mean, I'm gonna do my Darius. Yes and no. I mean, I think for a lot of teams it will be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, okay, yes, I think for a lot of teams it will be, but not for everyone. Phoenix doesn't care. Although Phoenix
right now,
shockingly, I mean, new owner and you want to make a splash, but Phoenix is not going to receive the real punitive problems of it until down the road, because shockingly, it's maybe the highlight of the Bobby Sarr era, as you like to call it. They don't pay the tax, so yeah. It doesn't really get punitive until you're in the repeater, when you start losing draft picks and such. So, or having them removed to the end. So I think effectively it's going to have, and there's always unintended consequences for these kind of things, right? The last big one was the designated veteran extension, or like the super, super max.
Yeah.
And the idea was to give the small market teams such a financial advantage in retaining their own guys, the best players, as opposed to, you know, it's not that big of a difference. And I'd rather go take, you know, I'm willing to take $20 million less to go play for the Lakers as opposed to the Kings or something.
Yeah.
The unintended consequence is it made those teams have to make a decision, like Sacramento, right? Like, we don't want to give Boogie Cousins, you know, whatever, the 5 years, yeah, 250,
Paul George,
6 years ago. So then you have to trade him. So there's going to be unintended consequences from this. I don't like it, but
yeah,
I don't like it as someone that, you know, follows two of the four or five or six highest spending teams in the league. So of course I'm not going to like it.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
The other thing is, I think we should encourage. I think the league is better when there are super teams, right? Because either you root for them, or you love to watch them win, or you love to watch them lose, right? It gives rooting interest, and dynasties are good for the league. So I don't know. The idea feels a little half baked to me, but I do think we are starting to see teams pay attention to it and prepare for it. I mean, look, obviously the Warriors with trading Jordan Poole, getting off the extra 3 years of Jordan Poole and taking in a year of Chris Paul. So teams are paying that. Boston with their trade, like, it seems like a tiny, small little thing, but Boston getting pick 25 as part of the Kristaps Porzingis deal from Memphis, and then trading down again 6 picks gets them to pick 31. Why does that matter? Well, because that's the second round. It's the first pick in the second round, which means there is not an automatic amount that you have to spend. They're non-guaranteed contracts, as they would be in the first round. So they probably saved, depending on what deal they reach with the second round pick, they're saving a couple, $2-4 million. They're at least saving probably $2 million this year. But over the life of the 4 year contract that they would have to give the 25 pick, you know, that's probably a 10 or 12 or maybe $14 million difference when they're going to have to pay Jaylen Brown coming up here. They're going to have to probably bring back Grant Williams. They already have Jason Tatum. Now Porzingis, if they want to bring him back after this 1 year, like those little incremental moves matter when you're up against that second yeah. apron. So, and you may not get a lot of teams' favorite, honestly, their favorite pick in the draft. There are teams, if you said, I mean, not when you Wembanyama is here, right? But there are a lot of teams that just in a random draft, the pick they would most like to have is 31. Because yeah. the difference in quality of player generally from 20 to 31 is probably not going to be very different. And it gives you a lot more financial flexibility.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Lakers really quick right. as you are about to hop back onto your phone for some Lakers stuff. But I want to start before we talk about the players, and I'm going to spend tonight looking at the players specifically. And, you know, from what I've seen so far and from what I've heard so far, you know, I'm at least compelled. I'm at least interested. Mm-hmm. The thing for me that I'm having a hard time kind of square, and I think this is where you and I are going to find some disagreements, is, look, at the end of the day, the return on the trade is going to define whether or not you are going to make a trade or a team is going to make a trade. We just spent the last 10 minutes talking about how first rounders aren't going to be used on role players anymore, and yet those teams that have those role players are expecting to get back first rounders for those role players. And I think that's kind of what we ran into tonight as an explanation for why moves for actual players weren't made as much. So we'll kind of see, I think, over the next, you know, couple weeks and stuff, what kind of trades open up for second rounders and stuff. But for me, not just using number 17 on a player and not, you know, trading that pick to go out and get a starter or two, even given the price or given the value of first rounders, but also using it on what appears to be more of a project, you know, more of an upside type play. Given the fact that the Lakers were just in the Western Conference Finals, it's the kind of thing that I can't help but, you know, get bumped by. You know, it's the kind of thing that like I stub my toe on. Yeah. So explain that for me.
Okay. So this is what I say. So this is, we used to talk about this when doing the hook last season, and when I would go on, you know, spaces and just pop in and try to give some insight. And, you know, with a lot of like with Russ, you know, everybody yelling like they're not doing anything. And the point always comes back to, and this is not a Lakers fan thing specifically, but Lakers fans are probably the primary culprit of this, is that it takes the other team wanting to do something also.
Yeah.
Right. The Lakers don't just get to like pick and override choose, go down the list and just say like this one. Right. You ready? You want to see this show is like too easy and too fun. We have to, I mean, not too fun, but this is not ridiculous enough. So I'm going to make this ridiculous.
Okay.
I have a reputation for bringing lots of friends to games. Right?
Okay.
Friends of the opposite sex. Oh.
Yeah, I saw that one.
Bad news about Lonzo. and so people will say to me, like, why don't you have a girlfriend? Like, you have all these girls. They're all so great, whatever. Why don't you just, like, pick one and like do something real.
Okay.
And my pushback is like, that's such an outdated thing, right? It's like the idea is that every single one of those girls is dying to be with me. And I'm just like, and I could just go pick one, right? Like there's just a lineup and I get to pick and choose, right? They have agency in this too. Do some of them want to be with you? Yeah, maybe. Do all of them? No. So the thought that like, it's a crude analogy, but Lakers fans, and again, not exclusively Lakers fans, have this tendency to think that like everybody should be available to them. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't work that way. Right? Like, okay, like I get a starter or, as you said, a starter or two for the 17th pick. Okay, whom? How do you know those people are available? So to be disappointed in something that you don't know, like there's an assumption that there's always a deal there. Sometimes there just isn't a deal, right? Sometimes mm-hmm. there is the 29 other teams in varying measures have very smart people running their operations too, right? And they all have different objectives. So like, I get like it, the option is, or the alternative is like, okay, I'm sure there are some guys that I don't know. There is nothing that I heard of that made me say, yes, like the Lakers passed up an opportunity. Mm-hmm. The Lakers took calls. There were calls made for once the 17th pick came up. This is also another thing I think you and I have talked about, maybe not on the show, maybe offline, is that teams were much less willing this year as opposed to years prior to just kind of take a flyer on a pick, right? Like, yeah. I'll trade you pick 17 3 days ago. It was much more so teams were wanting to see who was going to be available at each slot. Like, there were a ton of teams that were trying to trade, like, earlier in the day, were trying to trade with the Pacers for the 7th pick. And the thinking behind that was that a lot of teams wanted Anthony Black. And mm-hmm. everybody knew that he was going to go, Washington was going to take him 8th. So a million teams were trying to jump ahead of that to Indiana 7th so they could get him. But once Orlando picked him 6th, that dies for Indiana because everybody wanted the guy who left.
Yeah.
So like part of it was like, all right, well, who's available at 17? That's going to impact the desperation for teams if they have somebody in mind that they want. So what I can tell you is that at least from what I heard and what was brought to my attention, the Lakers did not pass on any like anything that would make you stub your toe. There wasn't something out there that the Lakers just didn't do, right? Have you heard you like one or two? I know the two that you're saying with the two starters that have been linked to the Lakers for 2 years, that was not available. Okay. That was not available before the draft. That was not available at 17. It just wasn't available. As far as the like, I do get it, right? Like the
premise.
Like the Lakers were in the Western Conference Finals last year, and you want to get better now, right? LeBron is however old LeBron is, and you want to get better now. I understand the premise, and I don't disagree with the premise. The Lakers need more reliable guys, more rotation guys. But if that's not there, that's not there. And look, you don't have to, like, nothing is set in stone. Anything and anyone is movable. So I do understand the premise, but my pushback is just like, unless you know of something that's actually available, then like, I think it's hard to hold Rob's feet to the fire to say like, why didn't you do this when it's kind of all theoretical?
So all fair. And you know, I also over the course of the day did hear that same thing. Not that like, you know, you need your stuff confirmed or whatever, but I did hear that with so much movement potentially. Now, we didn't see the same type of personnel movement that was anticipated, but that like for a variety of reasons, teams did want to see exactly who was available, which shortened windows for these transactions to be agreed on. And if you shorten a window for a transaction to be agreed on, that is already usually pretty difficult to, put together, mm-hmm. then that makes it that much less likely. And we saw, you know, over the course of the draft, I was getting texts about like, you know, so-and-so thought they were getting so-and-so, and the prices are just so far off between seller and buyer right now that it just wasn't happening. And I think,
right. And to your earlier point and my point about like teams want to see who's there before that, like teams have conversations like, hey, would you do this if this guy is available? Right. That does happen. But when it gets down to it, there's 5 minutes.
Yeah. You have five minutes
to make a pick. Like, and so if you don't already have a framework in place, because like, for example, Cam fell, like, you know, some places had him 4th, most places had him about 8th. He was there in the 20s, right? So
yeah,
this happens all the time in the draft where it just doesn't go how you like, doesn't go how you think it's going to go, right? So if you don't already have that framework in place, especially with so many moving parts, like the Lakers took three or four maybe calls at 17, right? Yeah. But like in 5 minutes, like it's that's tough to do.
Yeah. That's yeah. And look, you use the phrase holding feet to the fire. I'm not quite there, and I don't think I'll get there this offseason. I think, you know, with the way that the trade deadline went down and because the Lakers made it to the Western Conference Finals, like there is an amount of goodwill there that, you know, the front office has earned itself. Mm-hmm. That said, because like it's almost like a double-edged sword. That with that goodwill comes higher expectations. And you're saying to yourself, like, well, shit. You know, while I get and understand what you're talking about, where, you know, Lakers fans do have outsized expectations, it's because of the amount of success that their team has offered them. We've been a spoiled bunch, man. Like,
yeah, like, a lot of, yes, yes.
Like, but I'm a Vikings fan. I don't like, ago. I don't. When every time like a player becomes available because, you know, in the NFL, I'm not like
not going to the
Vikings are gonna, yeah. Like I don't sit there and like do jersey swaps for the Vikings because I know that shit isn't happening. But with the Lakers though, like that is part of the culture. That is part of the expectation. And I do think that, like, you know, we'll see how the rest of the offseason plays out. Mm-hmm. From what I've heard to this point, the likeliest scenario here is that they run most of this roster back with a couple tweaks here and there, depending on what's made available to them. They're still on track for that. They can still bring D'Angelo Russell back. They can still opt into their contract with Malik Beasley. They can still guarantee Mo Bamba's contract if they want more size up there and they want a longer look at that. They can see what Max Christie presents at the two this year. In ways that, you know, he didn't get the opportunity to do so next year. I think Dennis Schroeder has probably priced himself out. One player I have my eye on, given all of the movement up front that Dallas has done, is Dwight Powell, to see if he's available at say, the taxpayer mid-level. But I think, like, there's some things that can be done here, given what the Lakers are working with. And again, you know, the guys that the Lakers drafted, I don't believe that, like, I believe they can still be traded up until...
Yeah, you can trade them.
Yeah, like, they can still be traded. I think there's a time when they can't...
I think 30 days. I think you have to wait 30 days. Well, no, you have to wait 30 days...
After they sign their contract.
Once they sign the contract, you have to wait 30 days. Until they signed, you can trade their rights immediately.
Right. That's, yeah. And so, you know, there could still be some movement here and we could still see what this offseason looks like. I just, I find myself agreeing with a lot of people right now, on all sides of the, of, you know, every point along the spectrum. I understand the people who are really excited about, you know, somebody who is described as like a taller Dennis Schroeder. That's exactly the kind of player defensively that the Lakers needed in this postseason. There are a lot of people who are really excited about Maxwell Davis, I think his name is, a first-round talent who fell down to pick number 40. So, like, I understand that there's excitement there, but I also understand and find myself more kind of aligned with the people who were looking at you know, them coming off of a Western Conference Finals and being told, hey, here's these two young guys who probably won't play for you next year.
Sure. It's Maxwell Lewis, but yes.
What did I say? Davis?
Davis. Yeah. But that's fine. Anthony could be his brother or something. Yeah, no, that's fair. What you're, yes. He is more of a project. But what the context always matters, right? And what was the opportunity cost? It's the same conversation about keeping the pick or trading the pick. Is okay, like, sure, I understand, like, being not as excited about, you know, bringing in two guys that you say maybe are not going to be able to play this year. Okay, and but what was the alternative? We always have to consider that.
Yeah, I mean, like,
if there's somebody that was picked later that you say, okay, you should have taken this guy because I'm sure he could help now. Okay. I mean, maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong, maybe I would agree, maybe I wouldn't. But like,
I'm not a draft guy to be able to say that. And look, I'm not a draft guy, so I'm not going to be able to say that one way or the other. The people who I follow, mm-hmm. who are draft people, like the Lakers draft, and so like that's a good start for me.
Are they inclined to be favorable towards the Lakers?
Some yes, some no.
Okay.
You know, I don't. I try to not just follow Lakers people because it sets my expectations for what the Lakers have to be able to do to compete in a very competitive league.
Yes.
But yeah, I look, nothing happened today that makes me think, oh God, this season's for naught. They're writing it in. Like, no, they're mailing it in. No, I don't feel that way at all. I am really excited to like go to Summer League and if these guys are still there, watch, you know, what's going to be a really interesting Summer League team, right? Christie's probably going to play. He better play. That's my kind of team.
I know.
That's my kind of team.
I know. Just for you.
And they're going to be, like, Lou Williams is going to really like this team, right? Because they're going to be wearing yellow. So it might be like the Lemon Pepper Lou Lakers. Like,
wow. Yeah. I don't know the answer to that. Sometimes it's white. But
yeah.
Yes, the Lakers often wear yellow for summer league.
So yeah, I think it was a fine draft. I think the people who were going into it expecting, like even like when I was talking to people around the league, it was mostly like, yeah, they might move that pick. It might be this, it might be that. But like it wasn't, I never heard from anybody they are, you know, it's more likely that they do than they don't. And I tried to make that known. I said personally, and this is where I have to cop to my own biases, because my preferred outcome would have been that they move 17 and yeah. go out and get a starter for shooting guard. But, you know, so when I predicted that I think they do move it or whatever, it was more of a prediction. But when I was talking about like what I'm hearing, for the most part, all I was hearing was like, we think it's going to be really active, but who the fuck knows? Like, I cannot stress enough how weird this CBA is with the second apron. Like, it's the you call Steph the boogeyman. That second apron is the boogeyman around the league.
Yeah, it
you
is.
Know,
it is.
And I think everybody is trying to figure out, like, they're trying to build this plane while it's in midair, how to compete while avoiding the boogeyman. And if you are going to experience the boogeyman, how can I blow way through it so that the benefits outweigh
yeah, you
the cost
well.
There?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I agree with that. Like, yeah. What Phoenix is doing. I mean, Phoenix is going to be a disaster a few years from now, but like winning a title means you never have to say you're sorry. I don't think they're going to win a title, but
yeah,
I mean, if we're not trying to, like, I think we should encourage teams to do anything they can do within the rules to win a title. So, yeah, they're going to be a disaster. But I do kind of agree with the strategy. Like, I don't want to dip my toe into the second apron. Right? Like, if I'm going to take all these penalties, I'm going to do as Matt Ishbia has done and give the middle finger to the CBA. They're not doing anything illegal, so I give them props for saying like, fuck it, we don't care. Like,
yeah,
cool, y'all got your little apron and your CBA, we don't care.
Yeah, and we'll see what it looks like, you know.
But I would
and
also say, like, I understand, I don't think you're frustrated, but like a little underwhelmed, I guess, is how I'm reading your reaction.
No, I just think the draft was the draft. I don't know enough about the draft, like, in terms of the, I'm gonna be honest, I probably should have done more studying up on the actual players, but
no,
I was so hoping that 17 would be a starter that, like, I, you know, that I didn't. So I have homework.
But what I will say though is that, and I do understand whatever underwhelmingness you are feeling, or disappointment, maybe not disappointed
lukewarm.
In those picks.
Lukewarm is how I would.
No, you're disappointed that the Lakers were not able to get somebody whose name you knew before today for that pick. So I understand that, but my push, well, not pushback, but what I would say is, and I understand it because there are like certain tent pole, like markers of an NBA season. And draft night is one where I always say, I, this is like, other than Hennessy or unnamed cognac is delicious, my like probably catchphrase from our time podcasting together is deadlines create activity.
Mm-hmm.
So
or white people stuff.
Yeah, white people stuff. That's right. I didn't like Harrison in our group chat was like, I want to hear on Friday's episode about
how we don't have time for that.
Harrison. And I'm like, I'm not doing it. Like, I don't even want to do that. It's too sad.
Yeah.
It's too depressing. But that is white people stuff. Anyway. So deadlines do create activity. And this is one of the times during the year where lots of movement happens. Right. And so this is one time where I could say, like, it feels like something didn't happen because today would have been one of the days where something would happen generally. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would say is there are still some more of those, right? Like free agency is upcoming. Like the roster as it is now is not the roster in October. So there's still time to iron out some things, work out some things. Yeah, I'll say that. The roster as it is now is not the roster I expect.
Here's
in training camp.
I'll just quickly summarize.
No, you good?
Why I feel the way that I do, and I would say lukewarm is like the best way to describe it. Not hot, not cold. Just kind of, it is what it is.
But the reason why today feels like a missed opportunity to you, I think, is because this is one of those moments in the NBA calendar where stuff happens.
Yeah, and we might be finding out that because of this new CBA, that might not be the case anymore. That, like, draft day is going to be a day where, like, 30 teams line up, take their guy, and then, like, everybody goes home. I really think the CBA is going to be a disaster. But anyway.
I don't know.
All last year, and I've told you this privately, but all last year, all I kept saying was, give these guys a chance. Give Anthony Davis a chance. Give LeBron James a chance to take like a group of even decent role players and see what they can do with them, right? Give them a roster that makes even a little bit of sense, and let's just see what they're able to do with it. And then they finally get it, and they immediately go on a run, turn their season around, go from the 13 seed into the play-in, win the play-in, beat the 2 seed, beat the reigning champs. And yeah, they get swept in the Western Conference Finals, but they get swept in the Western Conference Finals by a total 24 points to the team mm-hmm. that eventually went out and beat the shit out of Miami in the NBA Finals, right? So like, it's a pretty good team that they lost in that series to.
Indeed.
And like, this is where, again, I have to catch myself and catch my own biases here, because I was so right in wanting a team that makes sense and in wanting those guys to have a chance at competing with a team that makes sense. I was so right there that I can overextend that logic here and think, well, let's just keep that good money rolling after good. You know, let's just keep that. And it might be, you know, that the Lakers just overachieved in a weird part of the season where you have teams that are tanking more than they would earlier in the year. And, you know, with a weird part of the season where injuries play a bigger role than they might normally.
And you have teams like Denver who just was so set where they were, they didn't care.
Right. Yeah. So like it's, you know, so you have that weird sample size that comes into it, but that doesn't necessarily apply in the playoffs. And yeah, Memphis was shorthanded, but the Lakers still, like, it was still a pretty lopsided 6-game series there. And yeah. by the end of like, the Lakers beat the Warriors to an extent that Steph was sitting there on the sideline with a towel over his head while his season ended. You know, that usually is indicative of one team being pretty, you know, noticeably better and tangibly better than the other. And again, yeah, they lost to Denver, but the team that they lost to wound up going out and winning a championship in, like, definitive fashion.
Convincing. Yeah, Denver was the best team in the league.
So, like, I just, you know, when I sit here and I'm kind of lukewarm from not, you know, adding to a roster with more reliable, you know, I guess, tested or players that I am more comfortable gambling on next year. That's why, is because, like, it's an extension of the confirmation bias that comes from being as right as I was last year and heading into this year thinking, well, why not build on that? You know, and it's not to say that the Lakers didn't think that. I'm not saying that at all. But right. Like, with the way that I feel from this draft, it's because this doesn't necessarily align with what I thought was going to happen coming off of the amount of success that they had last year.
Sure, except for that's ignoring the context that my analogy from earlier, like it requires that to be available.
Yeah.
You can wish and hope and want and have a vision all you want. But like if pick 17 comes up and there's nobody worth trading that for, and the best guy that you have on your board is somebody that, you know, you possibly, not the Lakers, you possibly think like is going to take a little time and not a rotation guy, I don't know what else you're supposed to do. Right. Yeah. You got to take the best guy you can find and hope it works out and trust the scouting department and Joey and Jesse, who have done a really good job at this kind of thing for a while now. So I understand your frustration. Frustration is probably too strong of a word, but I understand why you're feeling like you feel. But that doesn't mean that you just like get to snap your fingers and there are good options otherwise available. Like, are you all that excited? Like, are you really excited about Brooklyn's guys?
Both of them, yeah. Like, if they were there together, but if it was just for one of them, meh, you know. I think Dorian Finney-Smith is a good wing. I think Dallas really missed him.
He can guard you. He's fine.
Like everybody was really quick to blame Kyrie Irving, and I'm not going to sit here and like defend Kyrie Irving or whatever. But like when Dallas the season went in the shitter after they traded for Kyrie Irving, it was like it wasn't because Kyrie Irving was bad. It's because they traded away their one good physically gifted defender.
Yeah.
And that kind of player, you know, that was if you add Dorian Finney-Smith to the roster in that series there, you have one more guy to make Michael Porter Jr. think a little bit. Mm-hmm. You have one more guy to you know, kind of throw and see what you can do with Jokic, you know.
One more guy to get ignored on offense.
Possibly. Altogether possible. But not to the extent that Vanderbilt was. Like, he's a better shooter than Vanderbilt. So
I guess.
You know, I look at, like you said earlier, we aren't even disagreeing is the annoying thing here. There is still a shit ton of time for this to all be figured out. And also, by the way, the Lakers, let's just say they run it back, they're going to be better than they were last year. Health, you know, permitting, I'll knock on wood. But if they run it back next year, they're going to be better because they'll have more time to figure out, you know, where everybody's going to be.
Continuity that they haven't
had in years. Yeah. So, like I said, I'm lukewarm. I'm not upset. I'm not disappointed. I'm also not over the moon about it because, like, I can't get myself to, like, really get super excited about a project given what the Lakers actually need going into next year.
Yeah, I mean, so I would be more with you. There were. Like every team has their own draft board, right? And like, okay, Victor Wembanyama's first on everybody's draft board. Okay, like cool. But after that, there's some disagreement, right? There's some teams will have guys even maybe 20 or 30 spots different. But for the most part, people are kind of generally in similar tiers. There were two guys that the Lakers thought were possibly going to be available at 17. They just weren't, right? And so the Lakers draft board went as it went. They took the highest rated guy.
It was one of those frustrating because I had a pretty good feeling for who the Lakers liked at that spot. And it was, you know how you do like a fantasy football draft and you're looking at it, like
everybody, it's always, you have somebody in the queue and you're like, nobody knows this dude. And it's always the guy right before you that takes him.
Well, no, not only that, but like, you'll have multiple guys in the queue, right? You're looking at it. You're like, all right, so I'm five picks away. I should probably have like three guys here, right? Three guys here and give me one of these three guys. And then bang, bang, bang. Yeah. It was like, I saw it happening. I was just like, you know, cause you know, you send all of these texts over the course of the day and I'm just like, man, they're probably pretty pissed in that room right now. I mean, maybe not pissed or whatever, but like, you know, just the same. It's the same feeling that we have in our draft.
This is what I can say without giving too much away.
We need a sounder for that.
The guy that was going to the Lakers, that was picked before, obviously picked before the Lakers could get him. Even his agent was like, the team that ended up taking him, like a couple picks before the team that took him.
Mm-hmm.
Even his agent was like, they're not taking him. He's going to be a Laker.
Yeah.
So it happens. This is what the draft is. It happens. But I mean, like,
one thing I heard, and this is an actual, like I mentioned this on the show, but then after I said it on the show, I had somebody reach out to me and say, this is actually kind of how it's starting to play out. So this is actually a compliment to the Lakers drafting and scouting department. But when teams find out that the Lakers are interested in, like, the Lakers scouting department is interested in certain guys, everybody's kind of ears perk up. And it's like, you know, they're on a bit of a hot streak, and they're looking at, like, oh, what do they see with this guy? You know,
I will also
say,
like,
that's part of why, like, the Lakers are so secretive as far as they're leaking. Especially as it pertains to this, is because, like, as soon as that word gets out there that's somebody that they could potentially be looking at, other teams start looking at it, it's like,
So the two guys that were on that the Lakers, well, Shafino was one of them, was one of the guys that the Lakers had identified as somebody that could possibly be available and want. Now, to be fair, like, for those that, like, don't watch a lot of college basketball and are not familiar with guys and just want to look at, you know, value, he was generally, you know, you could see him at like 9-10 in mock drafts. Most mock drafts had him around 13. So that's a crude way of looking at it, but a crude way of saying that, you know, there's probably some value there at 17. Somebody else went before that who would have probably been the pick, but the Lakers are happy with who they ended up with. Now, I think he's going to be, like, strangely enough, I think, and this is generally the opposite for young guys and rookies, but I think he's going to be able to contribute more defensively than offensively at first. I think he's farther along defensively. And he's older. So, yes, he's a freshman, but older. So his body's built up a little bit more. But to your point earlier, like, those minutes are probably going to go to Max. So I get it.
I'm excited for Max, by the way. Like, I think Max is going to be really good this year. I think he's going to be one of those guys that people, like, again, to the point I just made a second ago, people are going to be like, God, another guy? What the fuck? You know, we see this with the Dodgers all the time, where the Dodgers will have interest in some player and other teams will catch wind that the Dodgers are interested in that player. And they're like, oh, what are we missing?
Yeah.
What do they know?
We don't know.
Yeah. What can we get in on here that the Dodgers are liking? Because the Dodgers have had such a run here of, you know, the Justin Turners of the world and the Blake Treinen before he got hurt, you know, like the so many guys at the Lakers. I don't even mean to do that one. He's just a good example of it. But, like, the guys who, you know, have the pedigree. No,
keep going, because there's more former A's there. So keep going.
I just, you know, people get the point. Most, you know, but like, you know, the Dodgers have found so many of those guys that when teams catch wind of, you know, the Dodgers are looking at so-and-so, other teams start looking at that. And, like, now what you're starting to get in baseball is agents floating that the Dodgers are looking at the guys that, you know, just so that maybe their guy can get a bit of a free agency
bump.
I had
to go to Blake Treinen.
I'm sorry.
It wasn't bad enough my team is leaving. That would just, like, had ripping my soul out, my baseball soul out. I had to one more Blake Treinen in on the way. Okay, cool.
I have my quibbles with Adam Silver. I really do. Clearly, anybody who listens to the show or follows me on Twitter know that I have my problems with Adam Silver. But fuck me, dude. The MLB commissioner, whose name is I'm blanking
Manfred
right now. Rob Manfred. I legitimately do not like that person.
You're getting no argument from me.
like when he's like when me. He's being a smartass about you know
everything
about fuck like him. Everything going on in Oakland. I'm just like, this guy, man, like at least
like Max Muncy.
Is he a former A?
Uh-huh.
I guess he was, huh? Yeah.
Andre Ethier?
Now, I mean, like, that was forever ago.
It was a long time ago.
Yeah. All right. That is going to do it here. I'm going to let you get back to your Lakers stuff. I have some homework to do on some players whose names I am going to have to learn. as we prepare for Vegas Summer League, which is only in a couple weeks when we get to start to see these guys in action. The plan as of right now, after this, so I'm going to post this right when we're done talking.
Oh,
the plan right now is to talk to somebody tomorrow afternoon about Jalen Hood-Schifino, right? Do I have that?
You have some homework to do, brother.
Do I have that?
You have some homework to do.
That was it, right? That was it. J-A-S. The acronym doesn't even like.
You did just fine, brother.
So we are going to talk about him specifically.
Who was the second round pick again?
Maxwell Lewis.
That a boy.
Maxie Lewis.
And who was the first round pick again?
Jalen Hood-Schifino.
Where did he play?
Indiana.
Where did Lewis play?
Pepperdine.
There you go. Look, you're out. Now we're getting there.
I'm a quick learner.
Muscle memory.
I'm a quick learner.
Muscle memory. You're getting there.
Aaron, I greatly appreciate you hopping on, dude. I know how swamped you are today and how swamped you are immediately going to be after this conversation, partially because I'm going to be peppering you with text for the rest of the night.
I got it. I don't sleep much as it is. Tonight's going to be a long night, so I got you.
But I do legitimately hope everybody who is listening to this at you know, in your car tomorrow, whenever it might be, or watching this live right now, understand how cool it is to have somebody with the insight that Aaron does come on here and deal with my bullshit. So Aaron, I greatly, greatly appreciate it. Had a lot of fun on All Access Lakers with Raj.
Yeah, thank you
during the draft. That's always fun too. So make sure you guys check out that when we go live there. And until you guys hear from us next, I'm Anthony Irwin. That was Aaron Larsoul. And this was the Lakers Lounge.